You mentioned Sam Elliott, but we have other famous guests that have been through here. So back in the 30s, I believe, John Dillinger stayed here. And so he stayed here with his gang, and it was the Wild West, and so they didn't arrest him. He didn't break any laws, and so he actually left here and got arrested in in Tucson, Arizona. And then another really cool one was Cormac McCarthy. He wrote No Country for Old Men, The Road.
Oh, that's an awesome movie.
Yeah, he lived here and wrote his books here and talks about the hotel in a lot of his books. So.
Oh, awesome.
Hello, friends and travelers. Thanks for listening. You are riding along on the Hostel Road Trip podcast. Our mission is to spread awareness of the true hostel experience in the Americas and share stories from the fascinating hosts who create those unique facilities. I'm your host, Jimmy Black, joined alongside co-founder of International Travelers House, Bobby Dyer. Each session, we sit down with hostel operators or travel influencers to hear about their road to success, discuss trending hostel topics, and close with tips for travelers who are seeking to have the ultimate experience when visiting each destination. You can't afford to miss this trip. Now fasten your seatbelts and let's hit the road.
Welcome back to the Hostel Road Trip podcast. Super excited to be here after a long break before any episodes, but we're here with Stephanie from the Gardner Hotel and Hostel from El Paso, Texas. Thank you, Stephanie, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. I've seen this podcast before, and so I'm excited to finally be on it.
Awesome. We're excited to have you. And then I'm joined, as always, by my co-founder of ITH Hostels, Bobby Dyer. Thanks for being with us, Bobby.
Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for joining us today, Steph.
Thank you.
So, for those of you who haven't been listeners before, the Hostel Road Trip podcast, our mission is to spread awareness of hostels across the Americas. And a big thing for us, of course, is America is an unsaturated industry as far as the hostel industry goes. And we need more good hostels out there, genuine backpacker hostels out there. And we want to bring the awareness of those that are out there and opening up. And I'm really fired up about this one because El Paso is such a classic city in the history of America of being a city going towards the west, people stopping as they are going out through a real junction point. And even myself driving back and forth through college to University of San Diego, I would go through El Paso every summer on each end of it. And just a great town, a great history, and so cool to hear now that we've got a hostel there to connect the more of the dots here of how you can travel about through the US while staying at hostels and not hotels. And as I was looking into it more, the Gardner Hotel and Hostel, formerly owned by the land by Sam Elliott's, family lineage, which Sam Elliott's one of my favorite actors of all time. Absolutely love him in Tombstone and other shows like he's been in recently, like 1883. So that's some awesome history. And then I love when hostels are run out of historical buildings because I feel it brings that character and that element to it. So really excited to hear all about your facility, El Paso, and everything else during this episode. So, but to kick it off, Stephanie, we often like to hear a little bit about the individual's experience first, besides the facility, and before we get to the facility in the city. How did you find yourself in the hostel industry?
Okay, so I guess it kind of goes hand in hand with the building because back in the 1940s, my great grandfather, who was a Lebanese immigrant, he migrated from Lebanon up through Mexico and came to El Paso. And he, didn't know the language, didn't have a penny in his pocket. He did pretty well for himself out here. And he ended up purchasing the building. And then when he purchased the building, so it's kind of, it's a like a like a shopping center almost underneath. So we have like bars and restaurants underneath, and all the rooms are one level up. So when he bought it and he leased the hotel portion back to the person he bought it from. And so he just was like the landlord, I guess, of the building. And then back into the 60s, my grandfather ended up taking over the hotel. And then in the 80s, my dad took over the hotel, and that's when he turned it into a hostel. So
Whoa.
it's been since the 1980s. Yeah. So I grew up pretty much since before I was born, it's been a hostel, a part hostel. And so in 2015, I took over. And so we've been doing that ever since. So it's kind of been in my blood. I've been around it forever.
That's awesome. So that's something right off the bat I didn't know about. I knew the building was old. I knew it obviously been a hotel, but it's been a hostel since the 80s, which is that's really getting back there, especially in the US industry of being ahead of the game and doing something outside the box. So how did your dad change it into a hostel? Like, how did he find out about hostels?
So it is a 1920s building, which lends itself perfectly for hostels. So a lot of our rooms are like a normal hotel room. So that's why we consider ourselves a hotel and a hostel, because it's a completely private room with a private bathroom. And then some of our other rooms have a private room, but a shared bathroom. And they have a sink in the room. And then other ones are Jack and Jill style. So there's two rooms that connect to a bathroom, kind of like what you used to see on the Brady Bunch. You know, that sort of thing. So that's kind of what we use as a hostel. So he said one day he had just taken over, I guess, and two girls from Germany were like, you know what, this would be a perfect hostel. And so he started looking into it, and he looked at the rules. And I guess back then it was, I guess with I forget what the organization was before. I always want to say AYH, American Youth Hostel. And there was guidelines on what you needed. So you needed a kitchen in the basement, a kitchen. So we put a kitchen in the basement and a common space. And from there it was born. And that really turned around the business back in the 80s. And it like that was a really strong suit for us for a really long time, was the hostel business really pulled the hotel along. It was really cool.
Wow. So that's super cool that that far back he got hit on that, tip. Followed through with it, went with it. That's so cool to hear, and and that you grew up with it, and were able to continue on in the industry. And just to highlight something that Stephanie brought up with that historical building element, we actually started in historical buildings ourselves at ITH. Our first house was a building from 1886, and
Oh,
so
cool.
these older buildings that were hotels were set up almost in that, like a boarding house almost, where like you had those shared bathrooms.
Oh, yeah.
You just had the sink in the room. So the setup way back in the day actually is conducive to the hostel facility. And that's something that aspiring hostel owners should know. A lot of times you have these really awesome historical buildings in your city or the prospective location that you're trying to open up, and they don't have a lot of uses, or people don't know what to do with them, and you can't really change them. They have to stay what they are. And that's actually fine for us. They can stay
Oh,
what
yeah.
they are, and we can run them as a hostel and keep them in the historical format. So that's so cool that you did that. And that's definitely a great method that we've operated under and suggest to others going after it.
Oh, yeah. We always say, want to validate.
Yeah.
We're unique. We're unique, and we want to stay this way. We want you to feel like you're walking into the 1920s when you come in here. So we try to keep everything as original as possible that we can do.
Oh, I just love that.
How
That's
has the hostel evolved since 1984? Would you say, like,
Okay, so at one point the hostel was going like really like r you know going, and we had 48 beds, and it kind of took a downturn in 2008. So a lot of people would come to El Paso to go like as their starting point to jump off into Mexico. And so they would come here, they would leave us their cars, and we would sell it for them, and then they would travel, go backpacking throughout Mexico. And when the violence happened in Mexico, it kind of took a toll on us. So we kind of got hit with the hostile side of that. So we don't see as it's not as big of a portion, unfortunately, for us. I'd like to get it back. I actually that's one of the reasons why I joined Naha and all these things, because I want to really get the hostel industry back to us, because we're a perfect fit for them. We still get a good amount of hostel, yes, but we're definitely down. We're now the 48 beds that we used to.
it's such another interesting point of outliers that are out of your control, right? You're running your business model, you're smashing it, you got good reviews, everything's running great. And then it's stuff that I call, outliers are out of the textbook. Like, you're never going to learn that in business school. All of a sudden, the country next to you starts going through this violent drug narco war. And How are you going to be in any control of that? But that can change the vibe, perception of the city you're operating in. And we're dealing with that right now in our location in San Francisco. Definitely a city that shut down the hardest during the pandemic and has definitely been the slowest to recover out of what we've seen. And that's just something that's out of your hands. And then the perception of the city from an international basis and even domestic basis isn't good. And you just see the traveling really slow down.
What's really interesting about El Paso is El Paso's been like the top safest city for many years, and we were next to Juarez, which is like the world's most dangerous city for a while. And we're very much a sister, we're sister cities. I mean, we have so many people who, like, a lot of my staff lives in Juarez, Mexico, and they come here, and a lot of like people go to school back and forth, or they work back and forth, or this we're crossing over all the time. So it's definitely, it has like any parts of any country, you have your bad parts and your good parts, but it's definitely not what it was back in 2008. Usually when there's a cartel in charge, the violence seems to simmer down, and I think that's what we have here. It's when there's a uproar, they're trying to find who's going to be in charge. That's when it happens. And when it happened in 2008, that's when the rest of the country was going through the housing crisis. Was everybody suffered then, but during that times, that's when Juarez was having the cartel fights, and so a lot of businesses and like people ended up moving to El Paso, so we never felt that that recession like the rest of the country. So we do work very hand in hand, and we're like I said, we're like sister cities.
And that's a there's a great advantage to being in that border city situation as you do. In ideal situations, you have the backpacker traveling through you to their next country and adventure. And we deal with that a lot with being in San Diego, right on the border with San Ysidro. We have a few locations in San Diego. Our first location was there. And that's always been very important to us, how the flow of that border is going. If that flow is going good, business is good. If
Yes.
that border, for whatever reason, political, whatever it might be, narco stuff, if it's getting jammed up, then it definitely has an effect on business. And it's just that type of stuff that you have to be ready for, and creative within to get through those times. Now, the facility, over to the facility a bit. You talked about how on the base floor, you've got like a commercial mall type situation. Right now, what's going on in that base floor? What type of shops and stuff do you have
So
down
we
there?
have right next door, we have a place called Cafe Rose. So it's all pink. Everything is pink. And it's very Instagrammy over there. So like their buns are pink, their chips are pink, everything's pink. It's a really cute place. We are in a transition with one. We used to have a place called Craft and Social, which is a craft beer place. And now it's moving to a bar called Proof. So we that's they're in the process of turning that over. So they're getting their liquor license, they're doing some renovation over there. We also have a place that's called the Pizza Joint, and it's on the corner. And then we have eight and a half or ocho y media, and we have also Dillinger's, which is in the basement of the hotel on the opposite side. And it's a bar, restaurant. Or, no, it's a bar. Sorry, no restaurant in that one. So,
Is that like a speakeasy, Dillinger's, or
Dillinger's. It actually used to be called the Speakeasy, and then they changed it to Dillinger's.
Yeah,
And
because
you
that's
guys
just
run that
No,
yourself, or do you lease that
we
out?
lease all those out. There has been thoughts, I think sometimes like maybe I should like make it more of a cohesive unit and run it. But then I think, do I really want to do that? Do I really want to open that?
Making
My
sure,
husband
yeah,
used to
that's
have the
another great
restaurant.
topic to broach into. Like when you have the building, you have the space. A lot of times you would find yourself better off just leasing that space out and trying to find another business operation that is conducive to the hostel. That would be something that the hostel guests could use and then everyone benefits. But now you've got a tenant who's paying you money and you
Yes.
don't have the headache and the worry and the pressure
Exactly.
and the added stress of running a bar or restaurant operation on top of the hostel. That's always an interesting decision to make, as a lot of the hostels in Mexico and South America and even Canada, those hostel owners would think you'd be crazy not to have the bar or restaurant because that's where they make all their money.
Yes. Okay.
But with rules that are different in each country, US, for us, A lot of times that scenario could be a little bit more complex than those other countries to pull off, and you could get yourself in trouble. We've had experiences with that where we're trying to run the hostel upstairs in a bar restaurant downstairs and kind of find yourself like a fish out of water sometimes. I love it when there is an ability to connect the two, where you have that European fashion of the bar restaurant is like the reception check-in. But I do feel as though that's a very unique setup where the flow of space and the facility allows that in the bottom line. So I think that's cool that you've got that model going where you're playing landlord to everyone down below and trying to find good tenants that might mix with the upstairs. Now, moving
So
to the upstairs, how many stories is the building?
it's 3 stories plus the basement. So we have the main floor, and then we have all the rooms 2 floors up.
Okay. All right. And so, and then you had mentioned something about like 48 beds. What's the occupancy you run at now? And like, what's the split between hotel and hostel?
Okay, so if you consider our rooms with a hall bath, hostel, it would probably be a good half of it. So we have 50 rooms. So we have 50 rooms. 4 of those are dormitory, but the other ones that have the hall bath or that are private rooms, that would probably make it about half and half for us.
Okay. And then do you ever have any problems with that mixture of the hotel hostel concept theme? Because that is, you know, another one of my favorites is that, you know, you can include the two and it can make yourself more diverse up front, and you won't lose your hotel guests. You'll still be able to grab your hostel guests. You can kind of appeal to both crowds. But it's interesting. A lot of times in the facility, how do you best separate that or combine it? I think it's really cool when you see that a lot of times the hotel guests are just as excited to hang out with the hostel guests in the common areas. You know, so how does that flow within your building?
I think everybody's, if they want to hang out, they'll hang out. And it's, I think they're pretty open to it. I don't feel like they're not open to it. Because I get a lot of people who book the rooms not knowing what a hostel is. They just see the price and they just kind of go with them. Some may not, don't. Like I had to definitely ask Expedia to help me change the wording on there. So I have like hotel rooms and I have it listed, and then I have hostel rooms and I have it listed. And there's still sometimes a little bit of confusion, but I think for the most part, they are completely fine with it. They understand. We explain it to them when they check in, and then they mingle pretty well. If they want to mingle, they mingle. If not, they act like it's a regular hotel and they go up to their rooms. It's in the basement really where the mingling happens. So that's you get the lobby and then you have up a floor. So they're not really inconvenienced if they don't want to participate. You know what I mean?
Yep, and I think that's one of the best angles to tackle that. Like, you could access this experience if you want to, as a hotel guest, yeah. But if you don't want to, you know, then you're just having the hotel experience. And I think that's really important how you might set it up in the facility. Like, you've got it set up where you have those separate spaces to have those experiences and interactions. But then another big thing is you do get a lot of people, even if you're not a hotel hostel, even if you're just a hostel. You get a lot of people that just book because of the price. And if you've got a good rating and the price is low, then all right, I'm in. And then they show up. And I always like to ask that. And they're like, oh, have you ever stayed in a hostel before? And they're like, what? No, what's that? And like, well, you're staying in one now, you know. But how you go about that in that delivery, or how you set your staff up to make that delivery, can be so important, because we do have bad perception, bad stigmas in this country. Part of the reason why we're doing this podcast, to bring more awareness to the beauty of hostels and the genuine backpacker hostels that are out there. But there is that element where we have to be ready to walk them through that, you know, experience, or kind of hold their hand, if you will, so that they don't get freaked out by it or by perceptions or stigmas they might have already. Because as we all know, once they actually experience it, embrace it, it's 9 out of 10 are like, this is awesome. I'm going to look for other hostels. And then that's really the goal that we're trying to do, is to spread that awareness. So now when that person's leaving El Paso and heading for California, they're looking on Hostel World, or they're looking on Google for hostels in California. to see where they might be able to stay in another good hostel. And that's what we're all trying to do, because it would help everyone. A rising tide lifts all boats in that way. So I think that, that's important that we always keep that in mind with people that are coming in that are unaware of the hostel experience or are new to it, or it's their first time. It's such a great opportunity to capture them. Now, in El Paso, are there any other hostels, or are you the only one?
We're the only one.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's it's a corner of the market, and to have that, and but also to carry that torch, because now if you weren't there, there wouldn't be any hostels in El Paso. So that's so cool that you've been there, and you've been there for so long. Now, how about just giving a little bit more detail about the El Paso experience? What could a backpacker look forward to doing in El Paso? What would be your suggestions to, an El Paso backpacker that comes down to the desk and says, "What do I do today?"
Okay, so we have Waco Tanks. Have you heard about Waco Tanks?
No.
Like a world-renowned rock climbing place, and it's really close to us. It's about 45 minutes. It's like on going towards the outskirts of town, but that's a really popular place for people to go. Right in downtown, we have the art museums. We have a Holocaust museum. We have, and those are all free to do. So if you want to do something free, right there, walking over to Juarez, I highly suggest. It's one of my favorite things to do. Is you walk out there and you grab a margarita at the place that who invented the margarita, and you go eat, have some tacos down there, stuff like that, and you can go to the Mercado. There's a cathedral down there, and then walk right back. We're about a mile away from the border, and then. And you can we have the Franklin Mountains, which are the city is built around. So we have about 26,000 acres of hiking right at our doorstep. So we have a placita that's a couple blocks from us, and they're always having events downtown. We're always doing something. We have a new Mexican American Cultural Center that just opened up. That's really cool that they can go visit and check out. So we have a lot of neat things. If you want to venture a little further out, there's White Sands about 2 hours away, and there's also Carlsbad Caverns if you want to go on a day trip.
Oh,
So it's pretty close to us, and then you could hit up the other Stephanie and Cloudcroft, and she has her hostel out there too. So that's close to her as well. So,
now that was actually one of my next questions. You're in El Paso and you're a backpacker. What are the closest hostels to you in your next leg? So you mentioned Cloudcroft. Where's that one at?
it's Cloudcroft, New Mexico. So it's
Cloudcroft.
right there. So it's about 2.5 hours from us.
What about some other ones that might be, since you're the only one in El Paso, what are some other hostels that are close by? Like, if someone was, what would you come from, maybe Austin or Dallas or?
Yeah, so Austin, so the Firehouse hostel that with Kent. So you have that one, and there are a couple, and you say close, those are like 8 or 9 hour drives.
It's Texas.
We're probably closer to you, okay?
Yeah.
So we are a good stopping point also because like a lot of bands, we get a lot of heavy metal bands. It's just really interesting
Oh.
that comes and stay with us, and a lot of bands in general. And so what they do is they're coming, they're on tour, right? And they're going to like ACL. So there's nowhere to really stop besides El Paso. The next other place is probably like Marfa, Texas. And then that's probably about 4 hours from us. And then you would hit like Dallas, Austin area, Houston area. But that's like Houston's like 12 hours away from us. So it's pretty far. So I think we're closer to LA than we
Then
are.
to okay. Well, but that gives that perspective in that trail, because it's on the Highway 10, right?
Yeah, I-10.
Yeah, I-10, which is a main drag through the southern states there. But why El Paso is such a popular spot is it is kind of a spot you need to stop, as you are traveling through that western area, and such a cool area. But I like to always in the show here mention other hostels that they could connect to
Yeah,
and
definitely.
stay
Yeah,
at.
I think
But
actually the Firehouse Hostel is coming up with a map for us, where we can
oh.
hit places to hit along the way. So we're getting ready to roll that out. And I think I'm going to see him next week. So I'll go out there and go visit and see his spot. So I'm very excited for that.
And I think that's so important, that connecting the dots, because I feel like we get a lot of more of American backpackers trying it out for the first time, American travelers trying out hostels for the first time. And there's not as many international backpackers right now because of political reasons and, different things like COVID happened and all that stuff. And the power of the dollar, all these things play into mix. And we don't have that huge supply of backpackers for all of us to cater to, which we're made to do from an international forum. It's so important that we continue to cultivate the American backpacker demographic. And I'm a big believer that a lot of times American travelers try it out, have the experience, like it, and then they're not aware of the fact that their next stop could be at a hostel too. And the more that we can have cross-referencing with each other, posters up, deals with each other, I think that that can really help us all accelerate the industry. Bob?
Yeah, I totally agree.
I had a great I had a question for you. You guys have been operating for over 100 years now. I have a few questions on this, as it's very impressive. How do you guys maintain the details for 100 years? Like, stuff, but obviously stuff breaks, but how do you guys, what approach do you guys take to keeping it looking so nice for 100 years?
There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that go into this place. All these gray hairs I have, I say they're not from my children. They're from this place. No, I love it. It's a labor of love, and you have to find really good people who love it at, like you do. And I am thankful to have a really good, actually, my handyman is actually my assistant manager. I just promoted him. He can do everything. So
Beautiful.
he's my right-hand man. Love him. He can do everything. He can do it well. It's those checklists and those checks and balances. We just always like housekeeping cleans the room, front desk inspects it. And then we have like a rotation. So like every 15 days that a room is rented, they get a detail. And then we have a schedule of for maintenance to go through, and they go through all the rooms. They have a checklist. They have to, make sure everything's good to go. And then it's just a rotation. It's just really keeping on it, like, because it happens. Sometimes I go and I'm like, how did this happen? And they say I have an eagle eye. They're like, oh, the eagle eye. I can see things. And I'm like, all right, open the curtains, look at everything. We inspect everything. So, it's hard because it is an older building, and things happen. And sometimes, like, one time we had a leak at one of the restaurants, and we could not, and we were, it was obviously us because we're the ones on top. So we were leaking on them, and we couldn't figure out. It took us like almost 2 years to figure out where the leak was coming from.
I know
Because
that
it's
thing.
not consistent, and it's like,
All
and
over the place.
yeah, but what I found is there's this really cool thing because, this is 80-year-old, no, actually 103-year-old now, pipes. So there is companies now that reline your pipes. So what we would do is we would, dig 3 feet under in concrete. Imagine how fun that is for the guests to go through concrete, give the room out for, God knows how long. But these people, it's expensive, but it kind of works out because you're not d dealing with all that. But they reline the pipes from the inside, and it's like the new revolutionary thing because, America's infrastructure was only meant to last like 80 to 100 years, and we're like past that. So, as things come across, we have to do things like that. But, like I said, we do it, but we try to make it like 1920s. We have the original bed frames in the hotel from the when we first started. So, they're metal bed frames. I take them to this place, and they sandblast them and powder coat them. We redo the furniture. I mean, we do it all. We do it all here.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
And
it's
the
a slow
same thing
process, but we do it.
for the staff, energizing the staff for 100 years. How do you keep, how have you guys been able to keep the vibe so good for a
Well,
hundred
I
years?
can't say for the 100 years. I can tell you for the last 10. Really, we just treat it like a family. We run very small, so there's 9 of us that run a 24/7 operation. So we just have to really act like family. So we meet once a month. We have meetings once a month. We do birthdays. We, just try to really keep together in the communication. Thankfully, we all like each other, so it makes it easy. But there's sometimes there's bad apples, and the bad apples can, really hurt a team. And you have to just, really think quick and, just take care of it. But thank God, I've been very, very lucky. I have a really good support system here, and they all love it. I mean, they all love this place like their own. So,
Nice. And then the last one I had was, obviously you guys have seen a few, highs and lows as different destinations have, ups and downs. Where have you guys focused on during the downtimes to try to, as you been around for 100 years. Is there an area you're like, oh, it's times are tough, let's hone back in on this, or any kind
Well,
of advice you could give there for other
I've
hostel
kind of
owners?
just doing it like right now, actually. I've just been going like to everything I can. I'm trying to make the hotel known. So like everybody says, oh, you're like El Paso's hidden gem. And I'm like, can we stop being hidden, please? I love being the gem, but not hidden. So I'm doing everything we can to do like the marketing efforts. So I've been like befriending the city that does the conventions, and I went on a trip with them to sales trip to Chihuahua, Mexico, and we met with travel agents and things like that. So really just thinking outside the box. I mean, joining Naha was one of those things that I was like, okay, time to let's go do the let's get the hostel side going, because I hadn't focused since I took over on the hostel portion of it until about 2 years ago. So I was just focusing on, okay, renovations. I came through and I had to renovate everything, and so I've been doing that, and I'm like, okay, now we're good. Let's time now to make some money. It's time to make the money. We've done refrigerated air, so we've had to put in mini splits in every room. We had to redo the windows. My next project is doing our elevator. It's a 1929s elevator, so we're keeping the cage, but we're bringing it up to standard because it's been hung for the last pretty much since I've been managing. So I've been going up all the stairs. So we're doing things like that, and now we're just focusing on doing on marketing, Google Ads, doing the Cloud Beds, meta search, and the other rep the one that reminds you every time, and things like that. We're just trying to just get our name out there. I had some marketing people that told the stories on Facebook and Instagram, because we have a you mentioned Sam Elliott, but we have other famous guests that have been through here. So back in the 30s, I believe, John Dillinger stayed here. And so he stayed here with his gang, and it was a Wild West. And so they didn't arrest him. He didn't break any laws. And so he actually left here and got arrested in Tucson, Arizona. And then another really cool one was Cormac McCarthy. He wrote No Country for Old Men, The Road.
Oh, that's an awesome movie.
Yeah, he lived here and wrote his books here and talks about the hotel in a lot of his books. So
Oh,
there's some
awesome.
things. Another one, more recently, is Longmire,
Oh.
the Netflix series. It's based on a Craig Johnson novels, and in Craig Johnson's newest novel, he talks about like a kidnapping happening on the roof of here. And so we have some things like that we do. So trying to focus on those really cool angles. We have like a McCarthy room, a Dillinger room, that sort of thing. So we get a lot of the historical aspect too, for a marketing standpoint. And then we have the hostel, and we have just regular space.
Do you
So
find a lot of people that show up are like, I want the Dillinger room, and
oh yeah
like people
yeah
are into that, or
yeah
obviously
yeah
they're not. Absolutely.
and even Cormac McCarthy, I think, is even bigger because there's universities that have courses just on his work. So we have a lot of that, and people that are like, oh my God, that's so cool, and they want to stay in the room and be inspired, like these other authors have been. So
That's amazing.
yeah, and just another, to other aspiring hostel owners out there, not only, as we mentioned earlier in the episode, these historical buildings are conducive to hostels. They have the shared bathrooms, they have the big kitchens, they have the high ceilings for the bunk beds a lot of times. But then you have the history that you can tap into for so much of your marketing and so
yes.
much of your content. And that's that beautiful thing of like, oh, I'm gonna go stay at this hostel and stay in the Dillinger room and take my Instagram photo in the Dillinger room and tag everything and really use that as your special sauce to highlight the cool parts of your property. I think that's awesome. And more people should do it. A lot of times people are sitting on those golden gems and they don't know it.
Yeah, pray into it. I mean, we got a Tommy gun on our wall in the lobby. It's not real, but we have a replica, and we have a death mask of John Dillinger. We have
That's the
all that
fun
stuff.
stuff. That's what gets people in this day and age, excited about it, Instagramming it, making it posts, then that catches on. And now you've got this whole built-in marketing theme that a lot of people would pay to have and pay someone to make. And you've
Yeah.
already got it in your building. That can be so much fun, and really embrace that, for other aspiring hostel owners out there. Now, so in closing, Stephanie, what would you say to aspiring hostel owners out there? you've been in this hospitality business your whole life. It's in your blood. You've gotten more into the hosteling aspect. You're a board member of NAHA now, the North American Hostel Association, which I also think, just as a side note, is a great way that we can collectively make a big effort and a big splash on bringing better awareness of the hostel industry in the US and fighting the stigma. So other hostel owners out there or aspiring hostel owners, please join NAHA and get a part of that group because we can have that powerful voice as one. But what would you say to an aspiring hostel owner getting into the game? Some advice, a story, a tidbit of inspiration. What might you want leave us with?
Oh my God, there's so much. I mean, you're going to see things you never wanted to see in your life.
Us?
You'll have stories. Your friends will ask you for stories upon stories, but man, it makes it fun. I'd say, it's not like hosteling because it's work, but it's fun. You can still have the fun times of it. I would say, meet the other hostel owners. And I think I love NAHA and I love the conference, but I find the most valuable part of NAHA is the post conference. I find that that's when you can really sit one on one. I mean, the information at the conference is really good. I love that. And you get to meet people, but it is like, you gotta go. That conference is fun and it's hardcore and but you're learning a lot. But to get on those one on ones and befriend a couple people, you can, celebrate and cry with. You need those people. You could just call, hey, what are you doing for this? I love the chats that we have going. I really think that's so important to that text thread that we got going on WhatsApp. That is so important. Any questions you ask, and people are up all hours of the night and they'll give you 10 different answers and you can find which one's best and you can reach out. And I think everybody is really good about helping each other out. Even people in the same markets, I find really good. They like work with each other. I love how the people in Colorado work with each other and they're like down the street from each other, and they're just like, hey, yeah, use that as your benefit. I mean, we're all here. We're all hostelers as well. We're all the travel. We all love travel and we all love doing it that way. And the whole part of being in a hostel and doing the hostel definitely overflows into owning a hostel with your counterparts, your other hostel owners and your other, people who are managing and doing things. I just think that's a really good community to have. And you have to have that. Like I said, for until 2 years ago, I didn't have that. So it's really, really nice to be a part of this community.
Absolutely. And well said, and so many good points on that, the networking aspect of it, because we are an unsaturated industry. And if you are a hostel owner, you don't want to be venting, bitching, and complaining to your staff. So you need someone to go to that has a relevant experience. And since it is unsaturated in a very unique business, it's not like you can go out with your friends to the bar and your friend is an accountant and your other friend, works retail. The stories you're going to try to tell them are going to blow their mind and be like, what are you talking about? So I absolutely 100% agree. Those connections you can make through those venues like Naha and the chats on WhatsApp can really save you and really be a great support system in those tough times and give you something to lean on and someone to cry with, as well as someone to laugh with. You definitely hit the nail on the head with that because you need both. Because we're all going to be in those moments. And without that support system, it can feel very lonely. It really can.
Definitely, definitely.
But, oh, so Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us. Gardner Hotel and Hostel, El Paso. Make sure you check it out and hit that Texas Trail, hit up Austin, hit up El Paso, and keep on trucking to California, baby, and ITH will be there for you. But thank you so much for joining us. And I look forward to coming and staying at your place sometime soon.
Come on over. Come on. I'll take you to Juarez. We'll have a good time.
I
You'll
love
get arrested though.
it. I'm gonna dress up like Dillinger.
Well, thank you all for
Awesome.
having me.
Thank you, Stephanie.